Mics are live.
Good afternoon, everybody. This is a public information exchange meeting with Xcel Energy. It's Wednesday, December 18th, 2019, 1:32 p.m. I'm Commissioner Brian Crotchis, joined by Commissioner Randy Christman and Commissioner Julie Fedorchak. I don't have any opening comments. Either of you?
I do not.
I do not either.
Okay. It's, again, public information exchange meeting, but why don't we just go around the table really quick, and Victor, if you want to introduce yourself, followed by company.
Victor Shook with staff.
Dave Cedric with Xcel Energy.
Drew Sieben, LR Xcel Energy.
Brian Amundson, Xcel Energy.
Bria Shea, Xcel Energy.
All right. Okay. Thank you. It's all yours. All right.
Thanks, Commissioner. As always, we really appreciate the opportunity that these meetings afford us to come before you guys and your staff and talk informally about some of the things that are happening in our company. I think that PI meetings began in 1993, which was about the same time that I began working on regulatory matters here in North Dakota. So I've practically my whole career, I've seen some very productive conversations during PI meetings. So hopefully we'll deliver again today here. But we do have a couple of timely topics that we want to touch on today. They're pretty important ones. And actually, 3 years ago, Brian was here, and he previewed our Advanced Grid Intelligence and Security Project to this commission. We call it AGIS for short, another acronym. And at that time, the project was sort of in its infancy, kind of early on. But now he's back with and Bria Shea from our regulatory group, back to talk about the status of the project today, and also to share a little bit about how we expect AGIS to really kind of bring our distribution system, our metering processes to a new level, and with that, we really hope that there will be some dramatic improvements and benefits for customers. So they'll touch on that. And in addition to that topic, you may be aware, but the coalition of utilities that came together and formed the CapEx initiative is back at it again. They're looking down the road, down to 2050, and they're doing an assessment of future needs for power transmission and grid reliability and accommodating carbon-free energy and, you know, what it's going to take. They're going to issue a report in January. And so Drew is here to kind of preview the issues that are being examined now and that will be discussed in that report. So just have two items today. They're fairly weighty. And again, we welcome any questions along the way during the presentation. So I think we'll hand it off to Bria to get us started on the AGIS project.
Sure. So like Dave said, I'm here to talk initially about the our AGIS project, and I'll talk kind of at a high level, set the stage a little bit, and then turn it over to our technical expert, Brian, to talk through some more of the details around the actual technologies. So the AGIS initiative, which, as Dave mentioned, stands for Advanced Grid Intelligence and Security, it's really focused on creating an interactive, modern, and efficient grid that will deliver more of what customers expect from us: cleaner, more reliable energy, and more ways to save money, along with a better customer experience. In other words, it's advancing the grid, and the way that we see this happening is making foundational investments at this time that provide both immediate and customer benefits and programs, but also laying the foundation for the future for additional technologies and additional customer value long term. So what is AGIS? AGIS is really our long-term, so it's about 2020 through 2029 strategic initiative to transform our electric distribution system to do a few things. First, to address our aging meter technology. As Brian will talk more, we are really reaching the end of our useful life on our current meters. We are actually the last utility to be using the current CellNet technology, so we've really maximized this investment. But the time now is to capitalize on the new technology that new meters in the industry have to offer. We're also changing the grid to meet changing customer expectations. You know, as customers are doing business with the Amazons of the world, they're also adjusting their expectations for, you know, utility providers. They want more options. They want more control. They want more programs. They want more customized information, and they want it more frequently. So we're with these investments, we're going to be able to meet those expectations as well. Improving reliability and efficiency, again, those are chief among the things that we consistently hear from customers. They want more options, and they always want improved reliability. And then lastly, again, with customer options and planning for the future, we know distributed resources are coming down. You know, they're going to be coming more frequent, and so we're planning ahead so that we can safely integrate them and have more visibility and control into the system so that we know when those resources do ramp up, our grid will be ready for them.
Rhea, how old is the existing meter system?
About 20 years.
Across the whole, you kind of did this.
For NSP Minnesota. So generally, okay. This is a larger effort. The Aegis is across all of Xcel Energy, but the current meter system is, for NSP Minnesota, is what I'm addressing okay. when I'm talking about reaching the end of its useful life.
And then when you talk about the customer expectations, we hear this a lot from various companies, and I'm always interested to know, how do you quantify those? Where do your opinions of what your customers want come from?
Yep. So I do actually, in two slides, I've got okay. that. So, all right. so next, let's see if I... the major elements of Aegis, and I'll just kind of give the high-level layman's view of this, and then Brian, just so that you've got an idea of what we're talking about as I go through my presentation, but then, like I said, Brian's got pictures and a lot more details. So here's kind of what we see when what we're talking about Aegis for today. The Advanced Distribution Management System, so ADMS, this is really the brains of the operation here. This has got the connection and the control to the field devices and the intelligent devices that really enables the visibility into the system and enables the automation. AMI, which are the meters, so that stands for Advanced Meter Infrastructure, and those enable that two-way communication between Xcel and the meter. FAN stands for the Field Area Network, and that is a private, so Xcel, we are planning to own that. It's a private communication network that allows the devices and remote monitoring and control between Xcel and those intelligent devices in the field. FLISR, which stands for the Fault Location Isolation and Service Restoration, is really the area that we're going to see reliability play. It's automated devices that work to automatically detect faults and then automatically restores them in the field. And then IVVO, which is the integrated volt VAR optimization, it allows us to more tightly control the voltage, which decreases system loss and optimizes voltage as power travels from the substation to our customers. So that's kind of layman's view of that. So you've heard us talk before about our strategic priorities to lead the clean energy transition, enhance the customer experience, and keep bills low. And certainly Aegis is consistent with those and helps us continue to meet those. So I'll just briefly walk through these. Leading
one quick second, Bree.
Yeah.
The VoltVAR optimization or IVO, what is that? Is that stuff that's on the – where are those devices?
So
located.
I think Brian will talk a little bit more about that.
I will get into the more specifics, but
right.
I don't hit on exactly what you want. Make sure and ask.
Sounds good. Thank you.
So for leading the clean energy transition, this will broaden economic growth and the use of clean energy through our Aegis investments. Really, I think the focus here, so certainly we're hitting on all of them, but really the focus for Aegis is enhancing the customer experience. It will improve grid utilization, effectiveness, and economics. It will help us identify outages and improve our estimated restoration time for customers. It will help customers be more efficient and lower their energy use. It will give them more information so they can react real time to, you know, if they so choose, they will be able to react and respond to, you know, however they would like or not like. They can continue coasting if they would like as well. It will expand our offerings and interaction opportunities similarly to the last point I mentioned. We'll just have more products, more services to be able to see, you know, perhaps what your energy mix is or what costs would be so that you could adjust. Again, just more control and personalized and actionable communication, which is, again, what we've heard customers want. And then just along the keeping bills low, it will reduce our total cost, effort, and time to serve customers. For instance, with the automation, it will reduce the field time in our truck rolls when we don't have to necessarily send our employees out to check where the outages are. They can automatically be restored. And then, again, it reduces calls from customers when we automatically know when they're out because we've got that visibility into the system. So a lot of efficiencies to be gained and a lot of, again, customer satisfaction that we expect to see.
Have you guys quantified those efficiencies?
To some extent. So when we're looking at that longer term, and Brian, you can jump in here too, but when we're looking over the 10 years, certainly we've got some that we're expecting to see, for instance, for the reduced truck rolls. We do have those quantified, but not necessarily, you know, everything that we might expect to see over the long term, but some of them, yes, we do expect to see reductions in, say, O&M for some things.
Okay. So just in terms of the comparison to the increased cost of this, and how much you expect to save, to be able to say that you're reducing costs, that's a pretty high bar.
So I think, you know, there's a couple points of comparison here. If you were thinking about and a couple variables I would note too. So first of all, customers have the ability to react, reduce usage. So, you know, part of it depends sure. on what they actions they take, how, you know, so that's part of it. Another part is whether you're comparing to, you know, business as usual where we are right now, which isn't, in our view, sustainable because our meters are at the end of their life. So even if we don't move to, say, an automate, you know, AMI, we would need to move to some sort of new form of new meters, so even if we were to get new AMR meters, and then we would need to send field employees out to read them. So I think there's a couple different, it wouldn't be, you know, if you're just looking from where we sit today to where we're going, you need some middle ground, no matter what, we need to make investment in meters. Mm-hmm. So a couple different variables there when you're talking about costs, which right. makes it complex, in addition to the, yeah, customer's ability to react and respond. So.
Yeah, understood. It would be good to know how the extra investment in the more of the automate, what the quantified savings would be projected to be in
yep.
terms of staff time. And that seems like if you're not sending people out, that would be fairly easy to quantify.
So I do, and certainly when we come in for a recovery request with you, mm-hmm. that was, you know, we would anticipate at that point having much more detailed cost and, you know, a longer term, more detailed view. But at this point, we're still kind of high level. This
yep.
is, you know,
understood.
So, but certainly, good. Yeah, at the time of a rate recovery request, we would mm-hmm. certainly provide that.
And I just want to jump on because you're going to need it. Frankly, when I just hear so far up to this point, we hear from your customers too, and then when it becomes, you know, more volume of those responses and we interact, well, it's usually a pole fire or a bird got into a transformer or something like that. Well, you have to send someone out to take care of that. No matter how much technology you have, you're not going to put a pole fire out from the office.
Absolutely. And that,
and so I don't know that technology solves the problems that are at the heart of most of what we hear from your customers. And I will just say, I have never personally gotten a call or an email or a text from one of your customers saying, you have, even if it costs more, we have got to have more interactive capabilities with Excel. I just need to be able to interact with them more. That's not been a complaint.
Appreciate that. Thank you, Commissioner Christman. And I wasn't intending to say that, you know, I think this is, you know, for instance, where we would have FLISR installed and opportunities for automation, that would be where we might see some opportunities for reduced truck rolls or employee time. But certainly we will always have our field employees out there restoring, fixing certain things. But there is some opportunities here to take advantage of automation and reduce that time in the field.
Certainly sending people out to re-leaders. I mean, that's time consuming. Certainly. There would be a significant cost savings for that type of work.
So getting to the customer expectations and how we got to where we are today. So to develop our customer strategy and our Aegis rollout, we committed to understanding customers' preferences, considerations, and thoughts regarding the benefits and values of an advanced grid investment. And we gathered this through extensive research, surveys, focus groups with all of our customer groups, including in all of our service territories, including North Dakota. Also, a lot of industry research like Green Tech Media and other utilities advanced grid plans, since a lot of utilities are ahead of us in this space. We've had the opportunity to learn from them. So we really did a robust, intensive research effort to make sure that our investments are meeting what we're hearing our customers want. So what we gathered from this research is, first, that customers want us to know them. They want detailed and personalized and frequent information from us. They also want us to inform and advise and enable them. They want to be able to make decisions about their energy usage. And then last, they want us to deliver seamlessly. They want outages to be less frequent in frequency and in duration, and we think Aegis is going to help us deliver on all of this. And I should note that during this transition, we've got a very extensive customer communication plan that is really three-pronged: for pre-deployment, where we are going to educate them, and then during deployment, where we will have one point of contact for people to reach out if they've got questions, and then long-term to help people keep engaged, you know, should they want to engage in products and services, et cetera. So we really have put a lot of thought into the communication strategy and keeping customers up to date. As we know, this will be, you know, a new experience for all of us. We're really doing a lot of work in that space.
Did you survey, you might have answered this, and I think it's similar to what Commissioner Christman asked. Did you survey customers to come up with these three areas that they're interested in, or is it anecdotal?
No, we certainly did. We have done, I think, about dozens of surveys, and in addition to focus groups and with all of our customer service territories, including North Dakota, in addition to, you know, research through industry partners, as well as just reading other utilities' advanced grid plans. So I do think we did a lot of research to make sure that we're hitting the mark here from what we've heard from our customers. So now that I've kind of given the lay of the land of what to expect from Aegis investments, we do have a short video here that I think is more illustrative than anything I would be able to tell. So if we could play that now, I think this does a nice job of showing what the future could look like.
What does it mean to build a future? At Xcel Energy, it means building our business around customers and the experiences we're putting at their fingertips. Starting in the first moments of our relationship and continuing through every interaction, decision, and shared moment that brings dependability and value to their lives. As we expand our customer relationships, we'll keep pace with their evolving expectations on how their choices can make a real difference in the world, leading us all into a greener and more carbon-free future. Even when the unexpected happens, we'll communicate and respond quickly and with clarity through a more intelligent network of technology and people. Of course, to do all this, we will need to make some improvements to our IT architecture. In its current form, it reflects our adaptation to a rapidly changing technology infrastructure as new systems have been integrated and new capabilities developed. But for future growth, we need to redesign it on a new, simplified foundation that restores vital systems to their original function and layers on more robust fabric for storing and using rich customer data, enabling platforms to easily flow together and integrate channels across every customer and employee experience. For business continuity, this new architecture will be flexible and scalable, so we can accommodate new partners and new models as our business grows and adapts to the future we build. A future built by something much more important than technology: our people. Across every level of our organization, we will use proven techniques, like Agile, to rely on our many talented people at Xcel Energy to work towards a new, more promising future. Together, we'll collaborate in cross-functional teams to design our business around better end-to-end experiences for our customers, our employees, and public stakeholders. As we bring our people, processes, and technology to bear on building the future, the experiences we create will be transformational for our employees and our customers. With integrated channels, platforms, and data sources that help guide them with new information to make proactive decisions that not only lead to a more efficient use of energy, but saves valuable time and money. Expanding our customer relationships beyond the meter means we can simplify how they access new services and put more control at their fingertips. Intuitive and seamless cross-channel communication is enabled by technology that adapts to people's preferences and moves customers from simply buying energy to more effectively managing what they do with energy in an ecosystem of digital empowerment and simplicity. And when our customers need in-home attention, we'll be there with the types of services they really need and want, like self-scheduling and in-home service. We will also empower our employees to play a more meaningful role as service providers, like sharing real-time location data, so customers can better manage their time and be assured of a safe and reliable solution to keep their lives on. In time, we will empower our customers with even more useful and intuitive digital tools that automate demand at off-peak periods, not only saving money, but stabilizing demand across the entire grid. This is a glimpse into the vision Xcel Energy is building. It's more of a journey than a destination. We're laying the foundation, transforming our technology, our people, and our processes, so we can build a more mutually beneficial relationship between our employees and our customers. Let's make history and build the future together.
So this is my last slide, kind of building out on the video, which I think does a good job of identifying some things that are possible. So I just want to orientate you here. There's a lot going on this slide, but we really expect Aegis will improve all phases of service with us. So if you start on the left with awareness, kind of when people would maybe begin a relationship with Xcel, and building all the way through, you know, calling to start and stop service with us, through their billing, payments, you know, options for service and products. And then finally, you know, the life stage / life cycle on their lifestyle, sorry, on the right. So that's kind of the phases of service with Xcel across the top. And then that first row is what customers expect from that phase of service with us. Again, this is from our research and focus group with the customers. So for instance, in that awareness stage, they're really looking for a trusted and responsible source. And then, you know, I'll just go through a few of these, but you can see on the next line that Aegis experience, that is the products or services that we expect. Aegis will enable that, really get to that customer expectation, and then you can see the bottom two, what customers are going to get out of that service and what we're, you know, the business value that is going to come from that service. So I'll just walk through three of these. So for instance, in that start, stop, transfer, column, customers say they want us to, you know, just have a seamless experience, especially when they're moving. And so one thing that comes with Aegis on day one with these investments is the ability to remote connect, disconnect. And again, there might be some regulatory fines required with that, but we'll have the ability to do that on day one. And that allows us, you know, obviously to do that remotely so that it avoids gaps in service for customers and, you know, hopefully provides a seamless experience for customers, which is a value for them, but also, again, reduces truck rolls for us and reduces call volume so people aren't calling us multiple times. Kind of going next to the billing and payments, you know, they want flexibility and transparency from us, and we'll have bill forecasting and bill prepayment options with Aegis, so that allows customers to have more predictability, hopefully a better understanding of their monthly bill, which helps us have increased satisfaction and, you know, again, reduced call volume. Again, all related to Aegis investments. And then I think the last one, which really resonates with me and perhaps is what you guys hear from customers, because this is probably the thing I hear the most, is frustrations about our restoration time accuracy. And so Aegis, again, when you're getting the support and service, people expect reliable service and accurate restoration times. This will be, again, a day one offering. We will have much more accuracy with that control and visibility into the system. So we'll be able to tell customers much more accurately when we expect their service to be back up, which helps them plan and, you know, again, from our perspective, increased satisfaction, improved reliability, and reduced call volume. So just some examples of things that we expect to see during various touch points with the customer throughout their relationship with us enabled by Aegis. So I think at that point, unless you guys have any questions, I'll turn it over to Brian.
I have one more question. Maybe it's more of a request, but I'm kind of intrigued by the customer research stuff that you guys alluded to. And so would it be possible for me to get a copy of the surveys or and the results in particular for North Dakota customers or focus group results or just whatever it is? I'm interested in what you asked and what customers said in response to your questions. We don't get that kind of data on our own. And so I'd really like to see what customers are telling you that they want, and so I can better understand that myself.
I will commit to getting you some information on a survey. I cannot speak. Obviously, regulatory doesn't do the actual surveys. The only thing I'm thinking about is I don't know how the segments they've got it broken up into, or I can certainly. Sure. So we will get you as yes. I understand what you're
just
looking
let
for.
Let me know.
And certainly, we'll follow up with you.
Okay.
Yes. Yep.
We can adapt from there.
Yep. Okay.
Okay. Thank you.
Super. Go ahead and hand the puck.
Oh, yeah.
Well, 3 years ago I was here, and it's pretty exciting to be back. I started down this road with the Advanced Grid Initiative 4 years ago, working in strategy, and pretty well moved into the project phase right away. And when the last time I was here, we were still laying in some of the contracts and getting some of the technologies specifications finished. But a lot's gone on since then. So just to bring us back to... So some basics about the distribution system is that it's really operated for the last 60 years or so as a one-way flow of power from the substations out to the customer site. We've had very limited visibility into what's happening out on the grid, and that's worked out okay for us because we had very predictable loads, manual controls, and the expectations were not as high. So that worked, but as we were moving into the future, we knew it wouldn't, and it's proving to be that way. So Aegis is about bringing in those capabilities that help us get to the future. I'm going to speak to five key elements here of our Advanced Grid Initiative, and I probably won't speak to this very directly, but you'll see that they all weave together and they support each other, and so this is not one where it's easy to do one element at a time and then tie back to another element, and that they all serve to help each other. For instance, the AMI meters are going to help with the voltage VAR situation, et cetera. So that may not be as clear as I'd like it to be, but we can come back to it if we have a moment. So the first technology I'll talk about is the ADMS, our Advanced Distribution Management System. That foundational, it's a computational system, and it takes inputs from a number of different places. Maybe an analogy that I could draw is with the transmission system. Excuse me, I've got a bit of an allergy going on here that I sneeze a bit. But as the transmission system became more complex in the 60s, 70s, and moved on, we needed to invest in other technologies to help us with that. So we ended up with SCADA and our energy management systems and state estimation, frequency control, things you may have heard and thought about. And all those were necessary because the transmission system was getting more complex. The same thing is now happening with distribution. Getting more complex, it requires those capabilities. So we thank you very kindly. A couple of things to say about the ADMS. It is a centralized system, and it's necessary as a centralized because of so many inputs that are coming from all over the place. There's a couple of the key integrations are with our geospatial system, our GIS, the geographic information system, from which we get the topology and all the connectivity out to the field and to the customer. Tied in very tightly is our outage management system. That's a critical component because that's where we get so many of our insights into the outages, and it helps us to sort through those outages. I'll go on here, just say that there's integrations with EMS, with weather, with security. I'll touch on security a little bit more when I get into the field area network. On the right side, starting to indicate some of the advanced applications that this core application enables. And I'll get to some specific slides about the fault location and the IVVO and beyond that. But beyond that, there's additional applications. There's microgrids in the future. There's demand response, being able to more accurately trigger demand response options. So there's a lot of different applications that can be built on. So it starts with this ADMS core application.
Do you find, Brian, that customers, and maybe Bria too, have gotten over the whole privacy issue?
No.
Okay.
There are concerns about privacy.
All right.
There will be concerns about privacy, and we're attuned to that, and we need to find the right path.
Okay.
A couple more highlights on ADMS here. So it is operational in Public Service Colorado, and I'm pleased to say it's working well. The way this is being deployed, we have three instances of the ADMS. One operating for Colorado, one will operate for Northern States Power, and one will be for our Southwestern Public Service. And that's necessary because of the capability, the scale of it. And then within NSP, we have three different control centers in NSP Minnesota. And so we're going to go live in NSP Minnesota. Our current date is April of 2020 with the metropolitan area starting to expand some capabilities there. And then the second control center that will go live will be the one that controls the outstate area of Minnesota and the Dakotas. So currently, I don't have it on the slide here, but it's looking like it'll be the first quarter of 2021. So through 2020, we'll be building and connecting substation SCADA and such to help enable this. Let's see. So what are some of the benefits here? Operational efficiencies, we're certainly looking for that. We want to be able to use our assets most efficiently. We want to feed our planning tools with better information about what is the loads out on the different parts of the system so that we don't overstress, but we fully utilize everything we can. So we really want to feed our planning system with better data. This gives us data not just at the substation, but out in the field as well, which is important for our planning engineers. Efficiency also means power factor, optimal power factor, and voltage control. We want to increase the customer satisfaction through reliability. I'll speak to that more on the slide coming up on FLISR, but that's a fundamental. We all know that utilities need to continue to work and improve their reliability. Cybersecurity is really core. As we started down this path, we really at the same time, our enterprise security office was really getting built up to speed. And we really went to school on what are the best practices, not just what is in it. NERC requires it, not just what's in the NIST framework, but what really are the best practices. And we were privileged to have some staff that really had some great insights into it that helped to really build this framework for us. And so as we walked into these contracts and into these different technologies, we made sure that the vendors were building in the capability to tie in the best capabilities. And I'll go through a list of those in a little bit. So cybersecurity is core. Integrated grid preparedness, Bria spoke a little bit here on how things will be changing. We will see transitions as more electric vehicles. We're seeing that in some of the metropolitan kind of areas, but we're also seeing it in rural areas as well. And while I personally don't have an electric vehicle yet, I'm watching to see when it hits the right mark for me. You know, we've all got a little bit of range anxiety about electric vehicles, but my goodness, they're coming on. And they are going to be real. For those of you that enjoy thinking about the concept of an electric vehicle and how few moving parts they really have, the mechanics and how those are going to work for us in the future, it's pretty exciting. Sorry for that little segue. So there'll be photovoltaics. We'll see more of that. There will be storage, demand response, other elements there where we need to be prepared and have the ability to integrate all these technologies as our customers desire. So maybe an example would come in well here at this time. So with the ADMS is going to help us understand if when we're in an abnormal situation, let's say that we had a feeder cable fail, and so we're in an abnormal situation, but then heavy weather is coming in, or maybe let's use the example of a heat storm that comes in and that's lasting for a while. Will the switching that we did, will there be any elements that would be overloaded? The ADMS will be giving the operator the awareness in advance that because of the integrations with weather, that the forecast is such that the load is going to increase to a certain level, and that's going to cause a problem. So we need to take some proactive actions. So having weather integrated with the planning tool is a path to that. So that's just one example. I will be staffing, or we already have built a group that's a small group that's the ADMS, the management group, to help ensure that the capabilities are built and maintained. I'll switch now to the AMI, and it would probably work best if we stopped and took a look back at AMR and just think on that for a second. So the history with electric meters, we've had electric meters for 120 years, believe it or not, actually longer. And they've all had a primary function of just measuring the energy usage, and later on the power, the demand usage. More complex meters were involved, invented for the commercial and industrial market there. But then around, we got to AMR, and the primary purpose for AMR, automated meter reading, was to reduce the time spent going out to the field to read the meters, reduce that cost. They gave a few other things as well, but they started out as electromechanical, and we deployed in North Dakota the AMR in 2001. And that's the CellNet system, which has been working and has provided us that, but it doesn't give us all the benefits the customers are looking for. AMI came next, and in the mid 2000s, and particularly around 2008 with the ARR funds, there was a large deployment of AMI in the industry. Over 50% of the electric meters in the U.S. are AMI meters. But I can very quickly tell you that the technology has advanced significantly from that, and we're actually in a sweet spot. We didn't buy into the AMI at that time. It was too soon. We had just deployed the AMR. And the AMI technology has moved on considerably. And that's so we're at the sweet spot here, and I'll get to a couple of specifics there. But think of the AMI meter as more, it's a little bit overly simplistic, but it's a computer within a meter housing. And it gives us that capability to not just meter the energy, but to enable on-demand integration, communication with that. And it also is able to monitor for a lot of other things, for voltage, for power factor, things that commercial meters did in the past, but not residential meters. Insights into everything from tampering, temperature, which can be a safety help. If the jaws in a meter are getting hot because there's a bad connection, this meter will tell us, and we'll know that before there is a safety impact that occurs. The meters are going to be capable of integrating to using time-varying rates, time-of-use rates, rates that we may not have thought of at this point. We'll be able to come together and move forward with as they are might be the best. It'll be possible to integrate with demand response. And then one thing that we have always ensured here throughout our advanced grid initiative here is we look at technology. We want to be able to upgrade the firmware, the software, security, et cetera, remotely. And so that's something that we've demanded that be in our specifications so that we can, to our very best of our ability, future-proof all the elements. One last thing on AMI, I want to say that I think Xcel Energy really did a tremendous job on most utilities that deployed AMI, and this was the case with what was available in the mid-2000s, went with a vendor and just chose among the different vendors what technology, what mix of technology would work. AMI is a combination. It's the communication and the meter. And so what we did is we disaggregated, and we started with the communication. We said, we want the communication that meets our specs, and our specs were demanding. And then beyond that, integrate with all meters. And so that we could view the meters as a commodity. And this really worked to our advantage because we were able to specify an extremely robust communication system that I'll speak to when I get to the hand. And then beyond that, choose the best of the meters that would work with that. So the AMI, and I think I spoke already to some of these elements here, and Bria has spoken to some of it, we're wanting to get information about energy usage into the hands of the customers so that they are able to digest that and say, oh, I could make these changes, or better yet, to provide suggestions on how they could use that to lower their bills. We want to enable that on-demand customer support such that when the customer is calling our agent, that the agent is actually able to look into the meter and say, so you have an issue you're saying an outage. I'm not seeing an outage, but I see a voltage dip. And that voltage dip is, and then later on we may be able to help identify that that's the air conditioning motor and that they need some help with figuring that out or so. So we want to be able to have that dialogue with that customer, and this meter will give us that capability. Next, I want to speak to a new technology that's I'm really excited about, and that's the distributed intelligence. You'll see about this in industry publications as well as under the heading of edge computing. And so before we actually completed our specifications for our meters, we learned about and were prompted by Brett Carter, our executive vice president, that really helped us to look at what is possible. And we looked into the capabilities of putting an onboard computer on there. And this edge computing, this distributed intelligence, is a space, consider it a computer space, like an iPhone where you could drop an app into it, and that app could then provide some benefits. In this case, that edge computing card has access to the meter registries, and so it can get that information at an extraordinarily fast rate, digest it, and come up with other benefits there. A couple of examples here. One of them we're looking for to putting on the meter is with load disaggregation, the ability to discern what is maybe it's a freezer versus what's a garage door opener versus a sump pump, disaggregate those different types of usage. And with that information, we could help to understand what is maybe drawing too much energy. Call it a virtual energy audit. If we're able to provide to that customer insight that says, your freezer looks like it's taking a lot of energy. And that could bring out the question, is it an old freezer that needs upgrading, or is it one that may not be efficiently running in such a... So virtual energy audits is really one of the paths that we really think we can provide great benefit.
So what's the what would be the next step if someone, a household, had an older freezer? You're not going to connect with appliance manufacturers, are you, or resell that data to them saying... Here's someone who might be in the market.
So this is where, you know, we do have to talk about the data privacy, but the concept is that the meter is able to, using patterns, understand that it's a freezer, and it'll have a bank of patterns that's available to it from what's studies that they have done, and then be able to say, this looks like it's operating like a 25 cubic foot freezer. It's a lot of energy.
Would you ever sell that data, or would you be prohibited?
We would currently be prohibited.
Yes.
You know, I think we do have ongoing conversations about privacy and all of that. But right now, yes, we have no plans to sell that. You know, any data that we're gathering as a regular utility, we would not sell that.
That would be perfectly clear to customers.
I think so. I think I do know, as part of our, like I
mentioned, our extensive communication strategy, I do know privacy as part of that, because it's not, we haven't heard a lot about that from customers, but I do know, you know, we do hear, you know, to an extent, comments about and concerns about privacy. So certainly that's part of our communication strategy, to make customers aware that, you know, what we are doing with the data we gather, that we wouldn't sell it, and that, you know, if they don't want to participate, there's, you know, there's options to not get the meter, et cetera. So certainly we'll have a path for customers with those concerns and communicate quite extensively about it.
Thank you. Good question. I'll give one example of a grid-facing capability. Since the meters will be able to talk to each other, a group of meters that is on the same transformer would be able to talk together and say, our collective load is X, and if that's too much for that transformer, we would be notified of that. So that's the type of capability that we'd be looking for that would give us some grid-facing examples as well. And there are dozens of these types of examples of use cases that we're looking through.
On this slide, that seems really bold to say that you're going to lower bills. Because right away, if I read that as a consumer, good, my utility bill is going to go down. Would it be more accurate to say mitigate increases?
It may be a good way to say it. It's meant to be that in relative terms that a customer will have the ability to...
Lower usage is what it should say. That's a great point. We should address that.
Yes.
Usage is what it should say.
Thank you for pointing that out. So I spoke at some length on those two technologies. I'm going to speak a little faster on the remaining three here in the interest of time. The field area network, as Brias had said, we're moving forward with the company-owned network, and this is one that we spent a lot of time specifying. And we're using, one of the things I want to point out is that we're using industry standards. So it's using industry standards is the best path to interoperability and to security. And so that's the reason for that. So we're using a WiMAX standard and a WiSUN standard. And the goal is to have one communication system to feed all of our needs so that we don't have to continue to invest in multiple communications. So it's an efficiency play as well. The fan goes in prior to the AMI because it needs to be in there for the first meters to be read there. And the security is paramount, and our approach for security, aligning with the NIST cybersecurity framework, certain elements are actually written above there. But we're certainly using those methods and employing monitoring and vulnerability management techniques.
Picture is.
Oh, good point. So the depiction on the right is that it is at a substation. And that is a monopole that has the WiMAX comes from it. WiMAX is a point to multipoint. It's line of sight, very fast, extremely low latency, very high bandwidth communication path that goes out into the field. And it, that out into the in the field on the regular distribution pole, we transition to the WiSUN network, which is more of a mesh. And the mesh builds a very robust communication path, but the it's a little bit slower, and that is not as limited by the line of sight. So that's the how we use those two communication methods together. We start at the substation because that's the hub for that area.
So if one of those goes down in a storm or something, then what? One of the communication towers?
We always have a backup, and in this particular case, if that particular tower in Englewood goes down, the network is also able to, through the mesh, connect to other backhaul as well.
And that's another benefit of us owning it, right, Brian, that we would be able to, you know, shift the path or correct it more so than if somebody else were to own it and we don't necessarily have the ability to prioritize. So that's one more benefit of us owning it if something were to go down. Yep.
So this is all wireless?
That is correct.
From the tower. So from the substation tower thing, I forget what the term you used for it, from there to the transformers on the pole, is that the next step?
So it'll go from the let me go back just a little bit from our office. It'll go out to the substation using probably fiber in most cases. There's some microwave and some other technologies. And from this substation, it's the line of sight, that WiMAX that goes to maybe it's a 35-foot pole in the field that has a transition from the WiMAX to the WiSUN. And then the WiSUN meter is talking to everything in its area that it can talk to, and they collectively build a mesh that they're all talking to each other.
Okay. And the WiSUN, that's also wireless communication?
Correct. Yes. Okay. Yes.
So you're building kind of a mini cell network for
The WiMAX is the closest to the cellular, sure. And the other is... Yes, good.
Just overly simplified for.
I was going to compare it to the Verizon network. So that's that's exactly in my mind.
Okay. FLISR, worst acronym in the industry, right?
But fun to say.
It is. So the concept of FLISR, and Chair or Commissioner Crispin, you're quite right. We still have to get out to the field to fix it when the problem occurs there. But what we're trying to do is to minimize the impact. Now, several years ago, we did deploy in Fargo an IntelliTeam system. And so it probably makes sense to contrast and compare those. So the FLISR does many of the same things, but it does more. It's sort of like FLISR is to IntelliTeam as AMI is to AMR. It's an expansion on and a building on capabilities there. So with the FLISR system, it not only do we identify that the fault is between two switches, but we are working very hard to pinpoint that it says that it's right in front of 324 Heather Street to help pinpoint the location. That, of course, gets us the ability to roll the service worker to the right location instead of starting at the substation or some other point and patrolling that line. Mm-hmm. So that's one of our benefits there. FLISR, the algorithms within FLISR will leverage automated switches, manual switches. It will have the configuration that day. So if we add another switch into the system, that automatically gets baked into all the capabilities and is added into that. If we're doing some switching that alters things, the system is the algorithms take care of that. It's going to work. And so this capability is also based on standards rather than an individual vendor. And so that gives us the ability to shop for the best devices out there. How is that going to work with the IntelliTeam system in Fargo? That will eventually wrap itself around, is the way I see that happening, integrated together. It will work together and continue to benefit. So we will continue to maintain and operate that IntelliTeam system in Fargo. Over the last 5 years, it's averaged a savings of 1.8 million customer minutes out. We frankly, together, put it in the right place, and it's doing the job. It's really helping.
What percentage decrease is that?
So, good question on percentage. I think in some years it's been as much as 30%, but most years it's more in the 15 to 20%. So, if you remember in Fargo, we've got our 25 kV system with longer feeders, and so it was most beneficial to do it there.
I may remember that we had a performance-based target of 57 minutes a few years ago. That's almost an obsolete target.
You'd like us to lower it? No.
Yeah. Find something more challenging.
The last technology I'll speak to is the integrated volt VAR optimization. That's an advanced application with on. Well, how that works, and back to your question, Commissioner Fedorchuk, what does that actually control? The picture at the right is depicting it's a relay panel in a substation, and the little blue box in the middle is the control that controls the tap changer that increases and lowers the voltage in the sub. So it talks to that and changes set points in that control. And then the lower depiction is a capacitor bank out on the feeder, and it's controlling those as well. So the IVVO, there's a number of different algorithms that can be used. Generally, it's either going to be a power factor control, or in Colorado, we're running it in a conservation voltage reduction mode. But the upshot is that we're looking at keeping the voltage profile flat, keeping the losses as low as possible on the system. So that's what IVVO is, and that's what's been operating in Colorado since April, and it's been operating well. So we know that technology works. The speed of deployment in the different OPCOs and the different jurisdictions depends on the rate of deploying some of these things. So that's something that we'd have to talk about as we move forward. So I think I've taken more than my time, but I'm going to turn it back if there's no other questions to Bria.
I don't have any other questions. I'll make one comment. The 57-minute mark is very good. That is essentially on par with the lowest outage figure that you'll find anywhere in any of the states in the country. So that is essentially top spot in a good way. So greatly appreciated.
So this is our last slide for AGIS. Just in summary, we think now is the right time to move forward with our grid modernization efforts. As we've talked about, the automated meter reading system is at the end of its useful life. There's significant benefits to be gained by moving to a new technology. And we really want to be planning for the future and this increasingly complex grid. I did want to quick touch on costs. And like I mentioned to Commissioner Fedorchuk, we do plan to come back, obviously, with a much more robust discussion and actually a request at some point, in which case we would have, obviously, solidified costs and details. But right now, just to give you an idea of the cost for NSP Minnesota, we are, over the 10 years, planning to spend $582 million in capital costs and $152 million in O&M. So again, this is very, very rough, but if you take about a 6% cut for North Dakota, that's about $35 million in capital and $9 million in O&M. So really a great example of the benefit of being part of a larger integrated system. When you think about those costs over 10 years, we're really leveraging our large footprint to spread the cost of these investments over all of our customers. Again, we think that the customer cost impact between what we would have to do with our meters and AGIS is somewhere in the 40 cents to $1.36 on a monthly average out to 2025. So certainly opportunities for customers to adjust usage, in some cases to potentially lower their bills. But again, we'll firm this up when we come back to you. But I just didn't want to walk away with no, at least order of magnitude of what we're looking at for costs here. So, in sum, we know customers want access to more information, more choice, and greater control, and they expect a more seamless experience with us. And so we really think AGIS is the tool to move us forward to do that.
Bria, would you repeat the O&M cost?
Sure.
And write fast enough?
Yeah. Sorry, I was probably speaking fast. So capital for NSP Min would be $582 million, and O&M was $152 million. And I just used a super rough cut for 6% for North Dakota to get to $35 million for capital and $9 million for O&M.
And that's over 10 years, not each year for 10
right.
years. You didn't talk a whole lot about distributed generation and just and what how this allows or supports that. Is this the is this the platform that is needed to support people generating and putting electricity onto the grid and getting backup service, et cetera?
Yes, Commissioner Fedorchuk, it definitely is. The ADMS system and in conjunction with the VoltVar optimization system are two of the technologies that really need to happen so that we can get to when we get to the higher levels of penetration.
Mm-hmm.
We can handle a certain amount with the existing system, but as it gets more complex, those are technologies that we'll have to have.
And will there be, I suppose it's hard to predict because technology is changing so quickly, but do you anticipate needing to add more to facilitate that, or should this be like make it you're ready to go?
From a control standpoint,
yeah,
it's going to be the vast majority of what we need.
Okay.
There will need to be, in my belief, we'll need to be able to manage the charging when it gets to a heavy usage, and that's going to be more of a complexity.
When you say manage the charging, what do you mean?
So either through rates and incentives.
Oh, the charge.
Here's the classic example is, let's say that all of us around this table represent different houses on one transformer. And if we all buy a level 2 charger, which can draw up to 9.6 kilowatts there, you do the math real quickly, and a distribution transformer that's a 50 kVA doesn't handle it. So the opportunities there are either the utility will have to invest in more capacity, or there'll have to be some management of that. That management we can go a long ways with just rate structures and incentives. Beyond that, there are a lot of thoughts about how that can actually be controlled to help mitigate that. But when we do that, it has to be done in such a way that the customers aren't going to be adversely affected.
Well, I would just add to that. I think there's definitely, from a technology perspective, this does go a step towards enabling some DER advancement. But I think there's a lot of still policy discussion
right.
and, you know, regulatory things
sure.
that would need to change to make
yep.
a significant shift. But from a technology perspective, certainly there's a lot of things
platform.
Here. Right, exactly.
And is it consistent with what, say, MISO would be using so you can communicate to them if we get, I know there's a lot of policy issues there too, but should that be the way we go that this would facilitate that and there wouldn't be like, oh, they speak a different language, this doesn't work.
Everything gets communicated using the ICCP, the Intercontrol Center protocols and such. There are communications with the transmission. I do believe that in the future, load shaping controls. There's going to be some interesting things that
mm-hmm.
happen there, but everything has to be done with a view to the stacking of benefits.
Right.
What's good for both the transmission, generation, and distribution, all of those at the customer, and making sure that we're in concert.
Okay, good. Thank you.
Okay, we're going to move on to a CapEx update.
Yes. Good afternoon. I'm Drew Siebenaller. I'm Manager of Regional Transmission Planning and Analytics for Xcel Energy. Here today is my role as Co-Executive Director of the CapEx 2020 Group. Terry Grove from GRE is my other Co-Executive Director, kind of tag team the leadership of that group. Here today to give an update that we got the group back together and we're starting to look at things again.
The band's back.
Right. We're started up again. So. Revival tour.
Older and wiser.
Right.
Better.
Exactly. Yeah. 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 Learned a lot of things with the last go around, but we're back to the same old tunes of system reliability and advancement. So definitely got the band back together. I don't want to go over too much of the pre-work here. Just a quick note on the first slide here. It says study. There's talking about study work. There's a correlation when you talk between transmission and study that there's a certain set of protocols certain set of steps that need to be taken, and an end result that's usually found at the end of that. This effort's really taking more of the academic study view, where it's really looking at a data set, looking at some individual pieces of information and trying to pull some insights from that and really level set and get some education out there for that. So it's not, this isn't something that in this phase we're going to be coming to you with a huge set, maybe something that would look like an MVP portfolio and vice versa or something like that. It's really just getting information out there to look at what are the issues we're seeing as the transmission owning entities in this area, and how we can incorporate that back into the normal planning processes.
Drew, maybe you'll be getting to this later, but I'm intrigued. Oh, there I see it. Never mind. I'm intrigued by the simulation of 2050 grid and what you use for that, but I see it in a later slide.
Right, yes, it's coming up. So there's a couple slides. Slide 3 and 4 show. 3 is an overview of where we've come from, 800 miles of transmission developed, with the primary piece of that being system reliability. Make sure we have a reliable system to get the bolts under that, meet the renewable portfolio standards that were coming into effect at that time, the time of this group coming together, and also support the regional transmission grid in general. So again, when the regional CapEx group was coming together, that was the very beginnings of the RTOs and the wholesale energy markets. So really getting a good start to addressing those issues. For this effort, for the CapEx 2050 effort, there's one company that is now, there's 10 this time around, and Coda Power did not choose to participate in this one. They're in kind of a unique situation with their RTO membership and didn't feel like it was a good place for them to be at this time. So the 10 of us are going forward with this and hope to include Minn Kota as we go along in further efforts.
So the states are Wisconsin, North Dakota, South Dakota, and Minnesota?
Yes. Yep. Okay, it does include, if you're including NSP, or a little chunk of Michigan too, but that's included with the Wisconsin piece for this effort anyway. So getting into the meat of it here, the foundations of reliability, these are, of all the conversations we've had, talking about what the grid of the future may be and that 2050 time frame, what does it actually mean? So really what we've been thinking is 2050 is a time beyond when the existing fleet is up and running at full steam, a time beyond when the existing policies are in place and can't be changed. So it's really that future time frame that where we can fix things and really set the system up to be reliable, to be safe, and to be whatever it needs to be to accommodate that future, whatever it may be. So it's the 2050. Two questions that keep popping up over and over and over again in those conversations are really the two bases. First one is there enough energy available? Can, with the resource mixes that we're looking at in the future, can those resources alone actually meet customer demand when it's being demanded? Or is there different technologies that are needed to accommodate that balance? Then the second piece, if there's enough energy available, if the resources are adequate in the system, do we have the system to transport that energy to where it's being demanded? So is the system stable enough, even if there's enough transmission line capacity, even if there's enough energy being produced on the system, do we have a stable enough system to get it there? So if those two pieces are in place, if there's enough energy and there's a stable system, the options for getting to what future state, whatever it may be, is expanded greatly. And one of the big pieces of that is you really, if you pull off these core technical reliability pieces, a lot of the additional decisions that need to be made become more economic. It's not about we need X type of resource because of this reliability. It's we need this reliability need, and this is the suite of things that can be done to meet that reliability need. So it's really looking at keeping those core issues at the top of the stack and making sure whatever plans go forward meet those, and then the choice is more economic going forward from that.
Drew, why do you guys assume that you're going to pull the core out, the stuff that's providing that reliability now? I mean, I know Wisconsin isn't saying that. Right. North Dakota is not saying that. South Dakota is not saying that.
Right. So the nice the nice
part. Driving that. And Minnesota isn't saying that either. Right. Xcel is. Minnesota isn't.
The nice part about the 2050 is that we get to figure out what's the worst scenario. So by pulling out those base resources that are supplying these services to the system today, we get to see where those issues fall and see if there's more economic way to meet those in the future. Maybe it's that we need new technologies to either extend the life of those assets or replace them with something new as is or in their same spots. So it's really looking at what is that worst case? What are the issues that show up that need to be really taken back into the planning process and made sure they're the core foundation of any analysis going forward. So not necessarily that they are definitely going away, just that if they were to go away, we know what to keep in mind when we're planning the system. So I'm going to the load and supply balance. We're looking at a few different scenarios in that. This is really looking at that energy adequacy. Is there enough energy? A few times that we've been able to pull some market data to look at. We've also been able to look at some simulations out into the future. That's on the next slide. We'll get to that. Summer peak with low renewable output is one of the days. It was the end of July of last year. Historic wind peak production day was early January of 2019, and then the hot button issue everyone likes to talk about is the polar vortex. If we encounter an extreme weather event like that, when we encounter an extreme weather event like that again, how will the system react in whatever that future state may be?
So, and the polar vortex being winter in North Dakota, South Dakota.
Exactly. Yep. Right. Normal end of January. Year. Yeah.
This is winter.
Yes, exactly. Exactly. So when those things happen, it's not a surprise and it doesn't catch the system off guard there. Plans are in place to be able to ride through things like that.
I always feel a little surprised when it's below zero and I walk outside.
Well, system shock, but it is winter.
It is winter.
So I think one of the big takeaways from that, the historical look at the load and supply balance, is if we go to a scenario which those resources that provide the baseline in today's system aren't there anymore, we start to see larger swings in the system, but the big issue is complexity. It just gets more complex to control the system as we move into that kind of a scenario.
So are you really doing this to identify the challenges of getting rid of these resources, so it's better known?
Exactly, purely an educational effort. These are the kinds of conversations that don't really get brought up, but they happen planner to planner, they happen operator to operator. People that are experienced working on the system, you'll say, well, this generator needs to go there. You say, well, we can't because the short circuit ratio is too high or too low. You can't put it there because the system doesn't work. These are the types of conversations that we want to bring out into the public more.
Mm-hmm.
So the issues are known, and at least there's a little bit more backing behind that. Yeah.
Solutions can be identified and costs associated with them.
Yep, exactly. So, and that's really what we're trying to do, just get the information out there and make it known that there are things that need to be kept in mind as we move forward. It's not easy to go to transition an entire power grid to any future state.
I see.
But having already set the goal to do that as a company, it seems to me that's already been the decision that Xcel has made. Now you're just figuring out what the costs are going to be that you want us to pass on to the consumers for.
Right. So Xcel Energy's driver for being in this group of utilities that are going into this effort stems a lot from our carbon reduction goals that have been announced. How do we get there? What does it mean to get there? What are the plans that need to be in place and the processes that need to change to be able to enable something like that to happen? But also, back to just the education, making sure that all of our processes are aligned so that when we have a resource plan or we have a distribution plan that goes forward, it brings in transmission and opposite the other way. So using the Aegis example, being able to leverage some of those in a transmission plan, which hasn't been able to really been implemented before, is something that may need to be facilitated more in the future.
So it's, I mean, you guys wouldn't state it this way, but it's taking this lofty goal and being a little bit more realistic about what's behind it and what's going to be required to get there.
Correct. There's a stake in the ground 30 years from now that we have to set a course towards internally, and this is what this is trying to get the baseline foundation laid out for.
Drew, I would just note, too, though, I mean, with all the other utilities participating, there's a recognition that we're needing solutions. Not all the utilities have the goal that we do. So, you know, I think there's a recognition in general that we need some transmission solutions for the future. So, yes, for Xcel, our goal plays into it, but, you know, not all the utilities partaking have a goal like that. But everybody's, you know, looking for a solution for a grid that looks different in the future.
Yeah. And it's good for you guys, too. I mean, you've laid that goal out, but that goal could change. Like, I mean, 50 is a long ways away.
Exactly. The part of the education is the only thing that can't change is physics.
Right.
So we got to know what the baseline issues are with that to be able to build anything on top of it. So getting into the hypothetical simulation, we projected out some of these scenarios to a projected 2050 time frame. So what we're really doing in the scenario itself, using production cost type approach, modeling type approach, is it's replacing some of the coal and natural gas with wind and solar, and then looking at how the market reacts and the interaction between the areas with those changes. So what we see with that is there's, again, similar to the historic look, there's a heavy reliance on imports and exports. So instead of locally supplying energy, there's a lot more reliance on external areas, not just supplying energy to you, but also taking excess energy when they're experiencing some kind of energy deficit or need a little bit of help on that front. So it's really the big takeaway is that as we move towards any kind of new future that doesn't look exactly like today, the system itself really needs to breathe more. And in today's planning processes in MISO and in SPP, that needs to be taken into account as we move forward. Not necessarily that something needs to change today, but it just needs to be in the discussion as we build policies around these changes.
Could that be termed as like regionally moving from energy independence toward energy dependence?
I don't know if I go as far as going from independence to dependence. I'd say more of a coordinated approach to energy adequacy. So terminology, but
interdependence?
That's a good way to interdependence would be good.
Okay.
So one of the discussions that came up early on in this effort, this phase one effort, we're calling it, is what are some of the rules that need to be changed? And one of the first ones that came up was resource adequacy. In today's rules, using today's resource accreditation numbers in MISO, to get to something higher renewable penetration levels, you would need to install enough nameplate capacity to serve almost the entire MISO footprint just to meet those resource adequacy goals. That's something that in and of itself is not cost effective. It's not a way to go forward into the future to reliably serve a system in an affordable fashion. So it's rules like that we're really looking at. What's the basis behind those? Do they apply to today's system? If they still apply to today's system, do they apply to a system of the future? And if they don't at that point, what needs to change? What needs to be discussed on those? One of the big things for me anyway is the stability of the system. You can have all of the energy you want. You can have all of the flexible demand you want. You can have all these technologies that you want. But if you don't have a stable system, none of that matters. The wholesale energy markets go away. The RTOs go away. Everything breaks back down into the basics of what system was built originally as, if the power stays on at all in those situations. So system stability is really one of the core aspects of this. One of the pieces we're looking at here is as we progress towards a lower inertia system, where is that cliff? Where is the point where system stability starts to be unpredictable? And what can we do to even approach that demarcation line. So what do we need to know? What do we need to keep in mind as we're planning the system from a holistic point of view, from the generator all the way to the customer's home? What do we need to know to keep a stable system and keep away from that stability cliff? And I think this just ties in all of what's been said so far. As we move towards the grid of the future, moving away from what we know as the core of all the system planning processes and just baseline information that we have, those base load resources are getting older. They need to be replaced. They might be in place. It might be a new technology. It might be a completely different area that you're replaced in. But what we need to keep in mind is the services that those units provide, those baseload resources provide, and being able to replicate those and replace them on the system. Again, may not be in the same spot and may be in the same spot, just as long as they're replicated and the system remains intact, that's the goal. And as we get further and more distributed, less centralized, that becomes more complex. Operating becomes more complex. The whole system from beginning to end, it just increases in complexity. And going forward from that, how do we take that into the future? If this is more complex, if there's less of a differentiation between the different planning paradigms, even within the RTOs, economic reliability resource, and then to the actual system, looking at generation, transmission, distribution, how do we incorporate these core pieces into the future planning process? What do we need to know? What do we need to have in mind as we go through those processes and develop new processes to be able to accommodate all of this? One of the big pieces of that, similar to the I've been saying all along, is when those baseload units either reach or exceed their life expectation or they become uneconomic. You got to figure out what to do with those. Either you upgrade them as they are, or you find a new resource to replace them. And incorporating all of that into the future planning process is going to be a key issue to make sure that we maintain system reliability going forward.
What resources are you looking at?
So as of right now, we're looking at anything thermal because that represents the baseload type resources. Not necessarily a certain resource type. We're really looking at what services are provided from those type of resources and what they do to the system.
So how do you get to 100% carbon free if you're incorporating thermal resources?
So that's one of the issues, I think, is needs to be a little bit pulled apart. Thermal doesn't necessarily mean, or dispatchable doesn't mean thermal, and thermal doesn't necessarily mean carbon producing. So there's all kinds of technology. There's carbon sequestration, there's hydrogen production, there's battery storage or long-term storage that can be dispatchable. So there's all these different technology types out there that can help assist in those services. But it's really about making sure that whatever happens to the system, it maintains a sufficient level of services to be reliable.
You're talking about for this study, this
right
studies in particular.
Right. That's a good point. This is really just a phase one. This is laying the educational foundation of things. There's definitely going to be more to come with it. Not necessarily scoped out yet. That's kind of why we want to talk to people about it.
Mm-hmm. How will this feed in MISO, the RAN, or, I mean, because some of these things you're exploring feel very similar to what's being pursued there.
Right. It's complementary to the RAN and RIA. It's really more trying to look at what do we need as local utilities and customer-serving utilities. What are the gaps that we see in those processes, and what do we need to pull back in to make sure that the system remains reliable from what we see?
And are you said the first phase is coming out in January?
Right. So we're gunning for a mid-January-ish time frame to have something out. I think the emphasis more now is on to have something digestible than have a date. So it might flex a little bit, but that's what we're shooting for right now.
And what components will that include, do you expect? Was there a list here?
Yeah, so it's really starting with education of how the system got to where we are today.
Okay.
Looking at system stability, looking at historical mismatch times, this projected 2050 production simulation type of approach, system stability, operations concerns like short circuit ratio, things like that. So it's looking at some of these issues that don't really get incorporated fully into the MISO process right now.
So you're kind of identifying the issues that need to be addressed.
Correct.
But not necessarily solutions for them.
Correct. We'll discuss some approaches that could lead to a development of a solution at some point, but it's really just identifying the issues and how we keep those in mind as we go forward.
Are you imagining solutions for this project in this 4 and 5 state area? Or when we talk about, you know, needing to bring in resources from distances from the more southern tips of MISO, or even larger than that through SEAMS improvements from other RTOs?
Right. So there's
how broadly are you studying?
It being a group of utilities that's doing this, not bound by RTO regions, it kind of makes it more local and broader at the same time. If I can explain a little bit more localized, you're looking at specific plans, specific issues that pop up close to home on the system. What happens if baseload units retire? What happens when additional wind is built somewhere that we may not have control over? Things like that. But it also kind of removes that RTO political boundary. So if we were to develop a solution, say if we were to come up with some transmission line to somewhere, it's really about solving the issue. It's not necessarily about where the endpoints are of it.
Good.
And that's about wraps up what I have. More to come. I expect something report-wise early next year. If you have any comments, questions, thoughts about where we can go from here, what you'd like to see, we're all ears. It's definitely something we want to have going forward. It's something that makes sense to everybody, not where we go and then we miss something that is of importance to someone.
How will you roll out the report?
As of right now, I think we're looking at posting it on our CapEx website for public viewing.
Okay. So if we wanted a presentation at some point, we could ask you.
Yeah. Yep, I'm more than happy to come back and talk about it again.
Okay, very good.
Any other questions?
I do not.
You look like you were about ready to ask something, so anything else?
No, but maybe staff to staff.
Right. Jerry, Victor, Adam? Pat's hiding over there.
So I could ask. Coordination are you doing with MISO for this CapEx effort?
So this initial phase, we're working with MISO loosely. As we get closer to a report and we get into next steps, we do plan on coordinating closely with what they're doing at the RAN REIA and potentially something else that may come out. Midwest Governors Association, OMS, RSC, all of those will be pulled in. Yep.
Okay. Thanks.
All right. Anyone else? I asked staff around the room. Anyone else in the room that wants to weigh in? Okay. Well, I don't have any other questions. Thank you very much. I know it takes time and effort to put these together. You have travel time as well, so it's greatly appreciated and very helpful. Very helpful in the process in terms of staying on top of what you're thinking and the directions that you're heading. So.
Right before Christmas. I'm sure you all have to rush back and get more shopping and baking done.
Yes. Oh, no, that's right, shopping. How many shopping days are left?
I know. Plenty for him. More than enough for both of those two.
Power is guaranteed on Saturday afternoon in the dome.
I don't consider shopping a problem.